Welcome to the Business and Leadership Channel. My name is Michelle Boulay, and I'm so honored to be a sponsor here at this amazing conference because it's my passion to help you connect to your own inner leader and let that transform the businesses and relationships you create. I'm a life coach and healer and an internationally recognized award-winning dance artist. And dancing taught me to listen to my own inner voice and let that guide me to my success. A very common thing that happens for business owners, creatives, and leaders is that you're so close to your next goal or breakthrough and then you stop. Doubt kicks in, worry, procrastination, fear, overwhelm, which kill growth in your business and creative process. So I'm giving a talk here on Saturday, October 24th, where you'll learn tools so that you can show up with clarity and belief in yourself and your ideas, consistency to keep showing up, and the embodied and intellectual understanding to move you gracefully through the challenges you'll meet as you grow, as you go for your goals. If you can't make it live, pick up your phone now, go to Instagram or Facebook, find me, follow me, and DM me the word success, and I'll send you the free resource I'll be sharing at my presentation. It's also in the show notes. However, I do recommend you attend live here or at my main stage presentation to get the full scope of what I'll be sharing to help you realize your creative dreams. And now, please enjoy this next presentation.
Okay, so today's presenter is Nathan Blair. He's the founder of the Somatic School, the UK's first ICF accredited school helping coaches incorporate impactful somatic approaches to work with the body's intelligence online and in person. He is trained in Hakomi, focusing in authentic movement and integrates these therapeutic techniques and similar modalities into a coaching context when working with clients and training coaches. Today, he's presenting to us on reinventing leadership through powerful body-oriented coaching techniques. Now, just a reminder to all attendees, this is a webinar format. So if you do have any questions throughout, please just post them in the chat and then we will have time for questions at the end. Welcome, Nathan.
Thank you, Mike. Beautifully introduced. Thank you so much. It's great to be here tonight. It's lovely to see so many people here already. This is great. I'm absolutely thrilled and delighted to be here at the Embodiment Conference. A good friend of mine, Rachel Blackman, was really a pivotal encourager to get me here tonight. And so I give a lot of credit to Rach for me being here tonight. So it's late here in London, and I'm curious how energy levels are out there in all over the world where you are right now. So on a scale of 1 to 10, if 1 was I'm lagging a little and 10 was I'm supercharged, if you just pop in the chat, I'd love to see where you're at right now so I can either empathize or get some sympathetic high, depending on where we're at. I joke, but actually it's nice to know. Great. Okay, cool. Just woken up. Nice cake. Lovely. Good, good. Okay, so there's a mix, but we're kind of around sevens, which we probably could expect. It's the classic, 7 is the classic number, I think, for scaling like this. Okay, great. So we recently changed. So first of all, I introduced I don't really need to introduce myself. I guess Mike gave me a beautiful introduction then. I don't really need to say much more on that other than the event tonight, or I shouldn't say tonight, whatever time zone you're in, this event today changed a little bit. The description changed, and I just kind of want to give a little recap for those of you who are tuning in thinking maybe it was something else, but I'm just going to kind of recap over. So today, this session is called Letting the Body Lead. It was titled The Body Reveals. Ultimately, we're going to be covering the same stuff, but just we've broadened it out a little. I discovered we couldn't do breakout rooms, so I've had to adapt a little bit. And therefore, today's all about reinventing leadership through powerful body-oriented coaching techniques. I'm a body-oriented coach. My school, the Somatic School, helps people learn to become body-oriented coaches and train in a number of different established and respected somatic modalities and bringing that into their client work. And today we're looking at this notion that people are operating from limited space as leaders, from a limited space, but we each have access to a much wider realm of intelligence. So today I'm going to cover 5 tools for leading yourself and others by talking less, feeling more, and following the body's lead. In doing so, we're cultivating trust, presence, and stability during these times of uncertainty, which you can imagine the benefits for that are obvious, but we'll flesh that out as we go through. I want to make this as interactive as possible, given the kind of setting that we're in and the platform that we're using, but I'm sure that we can do that. And I'm going to be drawing on lessons from body psychotherapy and the science of human relating, so that we can explore an alternative to this, to the top-down, goal-driven, fast-paced leadership that we see kind of so much in as a habitual kind of leadership that's across, certainly in the West, but across the but worldwide, I imagine. The main thing is we're gonna get these five tools over to you guys that you can really walk away with and implement. So I'm looking forward to sharing that with you, and they come from a wide range of places. I'm a strong believer in this notion that we're all standing on the shoulders of giants. I'm certainly no exception to that. And so in terms of it, this is just about how we're bringing together these ideas today in a way that's hopefully useful for you, and hopefully we'll have some fun along the way as well. So I guess first of all, I want to kind of lay the foundation for this. We live in a culture that largely has systemic, our awareness of systemic trauma, collective traumas and the impact of excessive sympathetic nervous system kind of driven cultures and, lack of connection with our lived experience. And the rise of burnout, this is the lay of the land in a lot of the workplaces. And today, the focus of this channel is the Leadership and Business Channel. And so we really want to explore there the idea that there is an alternative way of leading both ourselves and others. And we're drawing on these lessons from psychotherapy, body psychotherapy specifically, and somatic approaches to do that. And in order to do this, to frame this, I'm going to work with the five principles of one such body psychotherapy, or also known as a sort of mindfulness-based assisted self-study, which is called Hakomi. So Hakomi, can I just see in the chat actually who's heard of Hakomi as one of these approaches? Just a yes or a no. Yeah, great. Good, Tammy, great. Yeah, Hakomi's an interesting, great, not yet. Absolutely, you're gonna find out that, Krista, great, lovely. So this is great. Hakomi's is such an interesting modality or school of practice, because within certain circles, it's very well known and it's loved, I think, by a lot of people. But in the main, I think less people are aware of Hakomi, and I think that's a real shame. And so hopefully part of my role here tonight is going to introduce you to this, something that's near and dear to my heart, an approach called Hakomi. And there's five principles, and I'm going to use that as a kind of a guide to sort of structure our session tonight. Those five principles are organicity, mindfulness, non-violence, body-mind holism, and unity. So if you hear those terms, some of those might be familiar to some of you, and I'm going to kind of define what each of those are as we go along. And I'll invite you guys in for various exercises. I want to do a few experiential things as much as we can do without you engaging with one another, but I'm going to try and make these bring in some little things you can do to experience some of what we're talking about, not just hear about it. And for those of you guys who are in the main room, it's lovely to see you here. So let's see. We're going to start then with just introducing these one by one. And like I said, this is going to kind of frame the context for talking about this alternative way to lead both ourselves and others. So the first principle in Hakomi that I mentioned is organicity. So organicity is really this idea that complex living systems, such as human beings, are self-organizing and self-directing. So our task, certainly as a coach, which I primarily am working at when I work with private clients, that's I work as a coach. Primarily, so a task as a coach is simply to create the conditions that facilitates this, the emergence of this natural impulse towards health and wholeness. But we might extend that to the wider systems that we're living and working in. So as leaders, whether that be our family system, whether that be our communities, our town, our teams, or our businesses, you know, we're expanding this to systems like these, complex living systems all the same. And so there's this notion in organicity that there's a trust in the unfolding of things, that the conditions are perfect for what wants to happen. And that language like that, what wants to happen, might be new for some of you, but this is something that's quite characteristic of some of the work that I'm particularly interested in, which is this process-oriented kind of somatic approaches, like Hakomi, like focusing, authentic movement, to name a few more, gestalt. So coming back to organicity, the actualizing tendency that Carl Rogers speaks about is a good example of this in other kind of fields of psychology. So the actualizing tendency is this idea that given the conditions, creating the conditions for really kind of safety, acceptance, compassion for self, self-awareness, that people will have an innate propensity towards growth, healing, health and wholeness. And so how might this work then in terms of leadership? Well, one of the tools, the first of the five tools, so each of these five tools kind of ties into these five principles. They sort of work well together, would be one that a lot of you will have heard of, especially if you've been on the trauma or the social change channel, which is orienting. So this, the tool that, where I particularly find this useful is Steve Hoskinson is a fantastic speaker. He's also the founder of Organic Intelligence Company, and he's speaking at this conference as well. And Steve I often find the work of Steve and Organic Intelligence really useful for thinking about working with orienting. And so let's just do this from the offset. You know, some of you guys are here from all over the place. Some of you have just woken up. Some of you, it may be very late at night, as it is here in London. And so why don't we just practice this orienting to see if we can find for ourselves what the benefit is. Like notice and experience for ourselves why we would orient. And before I guide you through this exercise, I'll just maybe explain a little bit of why we would do this in the first place and why we might do this as leaders. The question, I guess in a sense, great, and I can see some people are huge fans of OI as well, and I am too. Great. One of the things I'd love to see actually in the chat is, you know, what do you guys understand of the notion of the nervous system, a regulated or a dysregulated nervous system? What it would mean to you to have to be able to have your people as a leader, whether that be within your family, within your organization, within your community, your wider community, what would it mean to you to be able to support people's natural propensity, as we said with organicity, this auto-organizing or self-regulating function that the organic system has? What would that mean to you to be able to do that for your communities, for the people that you lead? You know, so maybe just dropping a few things in the chat, just some thoughts or reflections on that. It's just nice to kind of see kind of where people are at with that sort of thing. This is basically what orienting, more relaxation, less stress, ease for me, better interactions with the team, absolutely. Less need to control, totally. Feel more in control and better communication, more presence, beautiful. You know, and so much of this today is about our presence as a leader. You know, whether you're physically present or not, your presence is felt, you know, as a leader or not, as the case may be. And so how can we be a generative and supportive presence for our people? Less resistance, absolutely. Good. Thank you, guys. That's great. So the reason for orientation is because when we orient, we have I'll tell you what, actually, let's do it first, and then I'll talk about the science after. How about that? Let's do that. Okay. So let's just take 60 seconds or less to just practice this. It's not going to be a big practice. Orientation is basically connecting to the environment through our senses. If you're kind of wondering, and you hear you say orientation, what on earth is that? It's connecting to the environment through our senses. So here's the invitation. Let's just do nothing just for a moment, right? I've heard Steve say this is the, you know, it's the hardest thing to do. And I could agree with that. Doing nothing can sometimes be the hardest thing to do. So let's just do nothing and see how that is. And let's take it easy. And now just let your eyes go where they want to go, where your eyes want to go. Somebody mentioned letting go of control. What's that like? To allow your eyes to go where they want to go, not directing them. And just see what you want to see, see what you see as you allow your eyes to roam through your environment. For now, we're just using this visual sense. Naturally, you know, thoughts will come and go, sensations, feelings, and then we're just coming back to this visual sense and just seeing what we see as we orient to the space. Another way I've heard Steve talk about this is how does the environment contact you through your eyes? How is the world making contact with you through your eyes as you do this? So it's not looking out and placing your gaze on the environment. It's allowing the world to come in, to receive. So the directionality is more receiving here, to truly see. Yeah. What in the world do you see? And as you do that, then the question is there any change in your state now compared to before? So curious how your experience has changed, if at all. Maybe you could pop that in the chat when you're ready. Or if you're enjoying orienting, then continue to enjoy that. Continue to enjoy that for as long as you like, in fact. We're gonna just, the authority of the body is something I talk a lot about. And it's just, you know, if you're enjoying orienting and I say, hey, why don't you pop that in chat? I'm like, Nathan, forget that. I'm orienting right now and I'm loving it. So do follow that impulse, yeah. So, okay. So there's a softening awareness. Yeah, way calmer and more aware. Brought a smile, gladness, more relaxed, more grounded. Calmer and got a smile coming up as my eyes landed on something that brought nice memories. Absolutely, something nice in that meaning channel. And then sense of calmness. More aware of colors, lovely. So thank you, Mark, Anna, Patricia, Kevin. Oh, good to see you, Kevin. Great. Nora, Tamu, so good to see you. So yeah, the world is wider. Conscious of my breath, says Carly. Yeah, lovely. So you can see, right? So, I mean, we can say orienting helps the nervous system regulate. But you can also notice that as you orient, you can experience this regulation, you know, the regulation of our nervous system, the qualities of which are things like, you know, becoming the world becoming wider, brighter, you know, somebody said softened and relaxed, a sense of calmness, absolutely grounded, great. And as I imagine there are hundreds of people orienting and sharing orienting as a tool on this embodiment conference, particularly on the trauma channel, where nervous system health and resilience is a hot topic in terms on that channel. But you know, it doesn't just have to be where trauma is involved. You know, I think if you're looking at doing this work around nervous system health and resilience, then orienting is the work that we can do, even when we're feeling good, to continue to send these messages to our biology that we are safe, that we are present in our world and in our lives. So you're just getting yourself more present through this very simple mechanism. And there are many physiological reasons why this works so well. And we're just, you know, when we're doing this as leaders, we might invite orientation. We might invite orientation in the formal sense of maybe we just all as a team right now, or as a group of people, allow our eyes just to roam around the environment, notice what is enjoyable to look at, what's nice or pleasant. You know, we might just do that, or we might do it in a more informal sense. Say, for example, you have somebody who comes in stress, they come into a meeting stress, or you share something or give some feedback, maybe, for example, and that person receives it. Let's say it triggers them, or it hits a nerve, for example, and they become activated, or their nervous system becomes aroused. And so, you know, one of the things that we might do to be a positive influence on others without controlling too much is just simply bring attention to the environment. For example, you know, you might just point out something in the environment, like, you know, wow, it's such a beautiful day outside today. Simple. You know, beautiful day outside today. And as that person, you know, as that person is in that state of arousal, they then look out the window and they take that in. And what does that do? It's really filling our brain with the neuroception of well-being, of ordinary right here, right now. Yeah. So it gives us, you know, bringing our attention to the exterior gives us all the information that we need. I just need to fill that brain stem with information about just right here, right now, where there is no threat, no evident threat, other than, you know, this is what happens, you know, when people are, to use this term, triggered. It's that process of something maybe that's not from the here and now, the nervous system responding in a way that's not from right here, right now, where there is no apparent threat, you know? So that's and orienting, just to give you a little bit more about this, you know, as I look around, right? There's the orientation architecture in our anatomy, our eyes, our neck, our head, our torso. And orientation uses the part of the system that's more about connection than it is about dissociation. For you guys, can I just see in the chat who has heard of polyvagal theory, just so I can get a sense of where you guys are at with that? Okay. I mean, who hasn't these days? And don't worry if you haven't. Cool. Okay, yeah. So basically, for those of you who haven't, just as a short, polyvagal theory is really amazing. It's really changed the way that we explore the nervous system by not just looking at the fight or flight response, sympathetic and parasympathetic, but understanding crucially that the function of the vagus nerve has two functions, the dorsal and the ventral, and that the ventral, importantly, is all about social engagement. We are social animals, and the importance of being social animals and being in connection with other human beings, actually, it's important for our biology. It's important for our nervous system health and resilience. It's essential. More than important, it's essential. When we have an impairment in the ventral vagal, we find ourselves moving towards isolation, and then from that place, a whole host of health, you know, negative health implications. But the dorsal vagal pathway, actually, which is the shutdown response, actually hijacks the pathways that this orientation architecture runs on. So if you are in that shutdown response, it actually deprives the part of our system that's all about connection to our environment, all about connection to others. So the orientation is a proxy for social engagement. Great. Orientation, tool number one. It's one way of thinking about it is attention out. If you're a leader and you're thinking about how to talk about this in a way that's jargon free, you might talk about attention out. You know, if somebody's, this is very effective, I found, when people are in shame as well. I find this particularly effective. I've been working in teams where we're running, maybe this is a long time ago. My work now, I like things a little slower pace, but when a long time ago, I was working in very fast paced environments with a lot going on, production management and things like this. And sometimes somebody would receive some feedback or input from someone that would send them into a bit of a shame spiral. And I found that attention out, this orientation, this connection to our environment, was a very effective way to help that person come out of that hole. Basically, to help that person come back into the here and now and into connection. Okay. And one other little tip, I think is quite good for that sort of thing as well. It's like, you know, if you find someone who's feeling a little bit sort of whacked, you know, by something, maybe they've had a hard day, you know, something, an argument with their partner before they came into the work. One thing I like to put across, and this is an interesting little thing that may resonate with you or not, it's this question: how can I improve this scene? How can I improve this scene? First of all, it invites us to bring attention out to the environment. And secondly, it has the added bonus of a little bit of service. And research has shown that, you know, through service, we actually find that we are able to, that it has, you know, that also has a positive effect on our system, yeah, through doing service for others. I just had a request to slow down a bit. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much. And guys, I'm really open to feedback of that nature. So please do stay with me and help me if I'm talking too fast. I'm mindful that not everyone's an English native speaker as well. And so we'll make sure that that I'm speaking clearly as well. So just let me know. And if you want me to repeat anything, just pop that in the chat. Cool. Thanks, Courtney, as well for your support there. Good. Okay. So good. Are we ready to move on to the next, to the second principle and the second tool? Yeah. Okay. Great. Good stuff. All right. If you do have questions, just remember, put it in the Q&A and we'll just take questions as we go along. I think it's the easiest way to do it. Okay. So the next one's mindfulness. So we all, you know, many of us are familiar with mindfulness. It's been very popular for a very long time. To put it simply, mindfulness could be simple attention to present moment experience just as it is. Okay. So in Hakomi, when we talk about mindfulness and as it applies more broadly speaking to leadership, for example, it's the understanding that change comes about through awareness. That when we're truly aware of our experience, we have what Eugene Genlin, who is the creator of a process called focusing, which is also near and dear to my heart. When we are truly aware of our experience, we have what Genlin calls, or focusing calls, the bodily felt sense of it. A bodily felt sense of it. I've heard that common quote, you know, you don't own it until you feel it, or until it's on the body. I think that's it, the quote. So you don't own it until it's in the body. So it's our experience naturally reveals its inherent meaning, and it continues evolving in a self-directed, life-positive direction as we bring mindful attention to it. So to learn more about this as a principle, generally speaking, you might look at mindfulness, Jon Kabat-Zinn, or focusing, Eugene Genlin. And mindfulness is the, you know, while focusing isn't mindfulness meditation, it's certainly a skill. That would be mindfulness by Jon Kabat-Zinn and focusing by Eugene Genlin. I tell you what I might do, guys. I'll probably email Courtney or Mike or Sarah the kind of the various references I've given, and then they can put them in the notes under the recording afterwards. So if you miss it, don't worry, I've got you covered. Okay, so mindfulness, right? So to do this, to explore this, we're going to try a little guided exercise. So I want to remind you to have the tool of orientation at any time. I'm going to invite, this is totally optional. You do this with your eyes open, your eyes closed. You might want to get comfortable if you're sitting down. You might want to lie down. And we're going to slow things down a bit. But one thing I will say is, you know, connecting into the body, into our internal experience, that might not be where you're at right now. And that's okay. So this is, first of all, you don't even have to do it if you don't want to. And secondly, if at any time you feel yourself feeling a little activated, or you've kind of felt something that's, that's uncomfortable, that's a little... you know, you're noticing some discomfort in the body, then remember, you have this tool now, orientation to the environment. At any time, just allow your, you know, open your eyes again, just come back to the here and now. Allow yourself to take in all that good information, the good news of we're here, we're now, and there's no threat. Okay. Otherwise, please feel free to follow along. Okay. And for those guys who are in the main room here, you know, this is the same for you. You could sit down, lie down, whatever you want. This is a kind of movement friendly space. So don't feel like you need to be pinned to your chair there. So I'd invite you to get settled wherever you're sitting or lying. And then this is not a focusing. We're not going to be doing focusing as such, but it's based on focusing. Instead, this is a process. We're going to guide you through a little guided experience so that you can feel yourself in the quality of presence that focusing invites us into. So take your time to just feel your body more and more. And as you do that, I'm going to have a sip from my enormous bottle. And then just returning to your experience, take your time to just feel your body more and more. You may want to shift around, maybe stretch a little, and this might be a time to just make sure that your body is comfortably supported in a way that feels right for you. And then taking time to just settle into body awareness, to feel how you're sitting or how you're being supported. And feel those places where your body is in contact with something, your feet, where your legs are touching, your buttocks, your back, your arms, those places of contact. Resting into the support that's there for you. Feeling your breathing, maybe. Feeling the whole inner area of the body. That includes your throat, your chest, your stomach, your belly. And maybe becoming aware of a sense of what supports you and that you can rest into that support. So just noticing how that is in this moment. In fact, you might be aware of what else supports you, like my voice or the other people in this group, the lovely faces on the screen. So there's a welcoming and an awareness that there is support. There is support. So we're aware of the support that's present. Another thing that's nice is as you move awareness through your body, being aware of what feels good in your body right now. Even just a little bit. Are you feeling a little more at peace or relaxed or open or alive? Even just a little bit. And this is not to ignore or push away anything that isn't feeling good. That's welcome too. But just bringing awareness to what's enjoyable. And this is a resource. Open, alive, at ease, peaceful, even if just a little bit. Bringing some awareness to that. Noticing what's present already, what's there already, not creating it, but just noticing what is there that's enjoyable. And that middle area of your body, the throat, the chest, the stomach, the belly, just inviting and sensing something that might be needing your attention right now. Maybe there's something in your life that's calling for your attention in your body right now. So pausing to invite and sense something that might be wanting your attention in this moment. And so it might be something that you sense in your body, a sensation, for example. Or it might not be something that you sense in your body. It might be an awareness of a life issue or an area. It's welcome either way, okay? And if it is like a life issue or an area or and it's not yet in your body, then you might take another moment to sense, and how is that in my body right now? How is the feeling of that freshly right now? So now would it feel true to say the words, something is here? And perhaps you can try saying those words internally. Something is here, as you just notice in that internal inner space, that middle part of your body. Something is here, if that's true for you. Notice how that lands inside. What happens when you say that? Something is here. And you're creating a space or being a space where that something can just be as it is. So maybe you could sense if it needs a hello, just some acknowledgement, or if it just needs you to be quiet with it, or if it needs more time, maybe. You might give it that time. And maybe you could just describe it a little bit. Letting the description come freshly from how it feels right now. So just allowing that description to come from this place. And when there is a description, you might offer it back to the feeling itself. You have a description, you offer it back to that space, that place inside you. That's something in there. And this is an important part here, because you're not just trying to label something here. You're feeling into it. You're checking it fits. Is that right? Does it resonate internally? Feeling how there's more to it than the correct description. Even the description fits, you can feel that maybe there's even more to it that would be maybe hard to describe. So the goal is not to describe it perfectly. The intention is just to be at the edge there, where you can feel that there is more than the description. And then that will emerge into being able to be described, but there's no hurry about that. We're doing it on its time. So we're going to bring this process to a gentle completion. And for those of you who do focusing, you might sincerely say to this place that you'll be willing to be back again soon if it comes and it wants contact, if you do focus in yourself. But for everyone, see if you'd like to thank and appreciate your body and your body's process, and bringing slowly in your own time and in your own way, bringing awareness back out, sensing the room around you again. And again, you might open your eyes and you may orient, you may do some orienting now. And you may want to make a few notes here, maybe in the chat, and just maybe sharing a little bit about whatever you were aware of, or especially a description that you felt for yourself. You might just drop down like a description that's there, that came to you. What was there and what did you notice? And Nora says, that's powerful. I'm curious, how was that powerful for you, Nora? Maybe you can stick that in the chat if you're open to it. So while people just write that in, freed up from knowing. Yeah, cool. Kept seeing a scared child crying and extending hands. And I hope that some of the what we were guiding you through there enable you to relate to that experience in a holding, compassionate way. Felt some pain, yeah, absolutely. Vulnerable, longing. Yeah, we can often come into contact. This is great. We can come into contact with something that's wanting our attention that maybe we've been ignoring or we've been blocking out. So I'm aware that my back is so tense right now. Absolutely, great. So you're aware of the tension that's there in your back, movement, a sensation in my fascia. Something radically hot, Patricia says, something radically whole sat me upright and reminded me I'm more okay than I sometimes think I am. Lovely. Great, thanks, guys. Continue putting those into the chat, because I think it's great for others to see what your experience was as well. And so you might be wondering then, so how might we use this? How might we use this as leaders? So one way to think about this, what we just explored there was the felt sense. Now, if you want to learn more about focusing in the felt sense, this is something that we train our coaches at the Somatic School, but largely we're drawing on the work of Eugene Genlin. We're drawing on the work of Ann Weiser Cornell, some great names, Nada Liu. And the practice of focusing is about getting in touch with this thing they call the felt sense. Now, the felt sense, it gets used all the time in our day-to-day language, right? Especially in the embodiment communities. But many people aren't aware of where the felt sense came from. It came from focusing. It's coined by Eugene Genlin. And the term means more than just a sensation in the body. It's our whole felt meaning of a whole situation, a decision we're wrestling with, a conflict with a relationship, whether that be with a colleague or a loved one, something that feels unresolved in us. Sometimes you just get that feeling that something doesn't feel right here, but you can't quite put your finger on it. Where does that not feeling right come from? It's this felt sense, in terms of what we think about it and focusing. So how do we use this as leaders? Well, imagine being in a board meeting, for example, and imagine having access, which we all do, and we can practice this, but having access to this source of, innate wisdom, intelligence, another source of intelligence inside our own bodies. And we get this all the time. You know, if somebody says something and suddenly you feel a tugging in your belly, you could dismiss that as irrelevant, or we might begin to listen to that. What would it be like to share with the others at that table? Do you know what? I'd like to just pause this for a moment because something about this doesn't feel quite right to me. Can we just stay with this for a second and just explore a little further and get curious about that? And maybe they would, and maybe if there was a culture of this, they might say, oh, what are you noticing? What are you sensing? I'm sensing this clenching in my gut right now. And if I just stay with that for a moment and I just acknowledge that, and then noticing, what does it tell me? What does it tell me? So it's a process of listening. It's a bottom-up approach rather than a top-down approach. And so there's, outside of embodiment communities, of course, the top-down approach is the common, but, also with a lot of somatic approaches, top-down approaches is common. It's like, how do I want to be? And what do I need to do with my body to feel the way I want to feel? Well, this is a different way about it. This is listening. What does the body know? And I think that's very, very powerful because it's an orientation that I think has, our relationship with ourselves reflects our, is reflected in our relationship with others. And it's a process of beginning with listening and then responding in resonance for what emerges in real time. Okay, so that's incredibly powerful. Yeah, this would be so empowering and freeing, says Tamu. Yeah, absolutely. And so that's one way to think about how do we create a culture of listening to the felt sense? you might be wondering, why listen to the felt sense? Well, Eugene Genlin and Carl Rogers did an incredible study that I'm amazed is not like referenced more, where they listened to thousands of recordings of therapy sessions, right? So real therapy sessions with real clients and therapists, thousands of recordings. And the intention of this was to be able to try and see if they could find out something that would be enable them to predict successful therapeutic outcomes. And the thing that they could finally pin down reliably from the very first session that created successful therapeutic outcomes was nothing that the therapist did, wasn't the technique, nor was it even the relationship between the therapist and the client. It was this thing that Genlin coined felt sensing, and it was something that the client did. And the way that they heard this in the tapes was it's where people became sort of lost for words they would, or groping for words. In other words, they would say, and I just felt angry. No, it's not quite angry. It was dismissed. Yeah, it was dismissed. Right. So where do we go to find that right word that describes our experience? Where do we go to learn the truth of our experience, to learn our deeper truth? It's to this felt sense. Incredibly powerful. Ninaf, I don't know the name of the actual study, but if you look up Genlin it's well known in the focusing community, so I'm sure you can find the actual name quite easily. And this has helped me distinguish between anxiety, anticipation. Yeah, absolutely. And anticipation. Sorry. So Tammy was saying, so you can discern as well as you connect with this felt sense, you can begin to understand and learn about yourself and how you are. Okay, great. So great. That was the second of the principles. Now I'm mindful of the time here. So the next won't take so long. Let's see how we get on. But hey, it's always good to have too much and too little, right? So the next is non-violence, okay? So non-violence, in other words, do no harm, as the Buddhists would say. So in Hakomi, and this is being mindful of the previous two principles, organicity and mindfulness, recognizing that there is a natural way that life is unfolding and aligning ourselves with this organic, intelligent process, aligning ourselves with that. That's what's non-violent in this context, is that aligning with this natural, organic unfolding, okay? This intelligent process. So as coaches, so as a body-oriented coach, you know, when we train at the somatic, we have no agenda of our own that we aren't willing to abandon at once if it somehow conflicts with what is emerging for the client. So how this relates to, and based, this is based, you know, largely on the wisdom traditions, Buddhism, Taoism, the Abrahamic religions, you know, humanistic psychology. Okay, it's all speaking to the same principle. But how this relates in a leadership context, it's noticing, you know, where do we have agendas that we're fixed and attached to so much so that we almost become violent in our pursuit, you know, violent in a kind of broader sense of the word, in our pursuit to either enforce that, even or maybe prove to ourselves or others that we were right, or that it is the right idea or the right way forward. How can we let go of that? How can we begin to start to follow and allow this art of allowing and not be overly controlling? But in addition, you know, do no harm. Yeah, so one thing this reminds me of in terms of do no harm is something that wonderful Deb Danner, who's a big teacher of polyvagal theory, says, which is about there needs to be one regulated nervous system in the room, and it better be yours. And that couldn't be more true when it comes for leaders. Okay, so our nervous systems are constantly interacting, and our nervous system has the potential to actually, you know, we can either stabilize nearby limbic beings and their nervous systems, or we can have the process of the effect of destabilizing others with our own autonomic state. So then, what can we do to get ourselves into our best autonomic state? So there are so many speakers here at this conference, and I'm sure talk a lot about how to regulate the nervous system, how to stimulate that ventral vagal nerve, how to help yourself calm and regulate and things like that. So great. But here's one tool that you guys can use straight away. And that is something from Hakomi called loving presence. So now the language might be a bit sort of, some of you might be like, loving presence sounds a bit woo-woo or something like this, you know, which is funny being at the embodiment conference. But loving presence, this is essentially, in practice, it's sourcing inspiration or nourishment from the person that you're interacting with. In the coaching context, it's a client. If you're a leader, that might be your colleagues. It's seeing the person that you're with as a source of nourishment and inspiration for you. So it's a generative process of giving you energy, but also what it does is it naturally creates the cues of safety and welcome associated with co-regulation. So if your autonomic state is one of shutdown or then you have a flat affect, rigidity is prone, so you maybe have a straight neck, you know, your monotone voice sort of thing. Whereas when you're in you're in ventral vagal social engagement, you have a natural tilt to the head, a sincere smile, which you can tell from the creases at the corners of the eyes, the tone of your voice. You've got prosody of the voice, the melody, it kind of up and down rather than this monotone and flat and low. And you can know the cues for co-regulation, but if you were to artificially try to engineer that in yourself, the neuroception, that sense of that's constantly scanning for, am I safe? You're not going to kid your neuroception of others. So loving presence, seeing the people you're interacting with as a source of inspiration and nourishment for you, can naturally create those cues of safety, naturally create that smile on your face, the tilt, the prosody in the voice, you know. So it's, you know, so psychological safety arises from this from us taking this kind of approach in as a leader. We had a conversation about this in the training today, for example, which is that we just ran a module this weekend And it was, somebody said, but what about tough love? Well, loving presence is not about being nice, just being nice to people, but what makes tough love rather than, and not just tough. What makes tough love and not just tough? It's the love piece, you know? So having, when somebody can feel that honestly, you sincerely care about them. In fact, more than that, you find them, you find you're experiencing joy just being in their presence. You know, they are a source of nourishment and inspiration. They can feel that. They can feel that underlying. So it's much easier to, for you to share things that are maybe perhaps like slightly more challenging things to share with somebody, or, you know, giving someone challenge, or maybe offering some feedback, you know. So there's this phrase, I used to work at an organization. They said that they were 51% feminine and 39% masculine in their approach. And one of the things that they used to say was, your attention makes me brilliant. And I love that, because we, our attention, the attention that we have on another person has the potential to have someone to become bright or diminish someone. We know that from experience, but if you can be really conscious of how the quality of your attention is on another person, loving presence, for example, really help a lot with that. You know, bring out the best in people. Be grateful for your people, you know, be happy to see them, you know, and truly genuinely find what is honestly a joy for you with that. Okay. We have such little time left here, guys. I want to just show you one thing before we finish, actually, because I'm not going to get to the fifth principle, it looks like, but the fourth one is body-mind holism. And let me just share with you what that is. It's basically that the body is an expression of the mind. Okay, and vice versa. It refers to the complexity and interrelatedness of organic systems. So mind, body, soul as an integrated whole, allowing us as leaders, for example, to holographically read a person's life story from the way that they sit, their tone of voice, for example. It's impossible to work with someone psychologically without paying attention to their embodied experience from this perspective. So you just have to look at somatic psychology, the field of that, embodied cognition. Okay, I want to share with you one thing. So you can do this with your teams. It's a really interesting exercise, and it's just one way for you to learn about people without words. Okay, let me just turn on myself for you. I know we finished promptly, Mike, so I'm going to keep this brief. So I'm going to, I've got a chair here, one second. Okay, here's the chair I put here earlier. Here's one I made earlier. Right, so you invite people to just demonstrate sitting, okay? So you just invite people to demonstrate, to show you how they come to sit, approaching the chair and then sitting down, okay? And then stand up again. Approach the chair, sit down. You've seen that a couple of times, and then you try that yourself. So you've watched how somebody comes to sit, and then you give that a go yourself. And then from trying it yourself, from literally stepping into that person's shoes, so to speak, from inhabiting their world and their way of being, you ask yourself these questions. I'll pop these in the chat. So it would be like, okay, here you go. What do you think their body is saying to the chair? What is the chair saying to their body? And for example, that might be something like, I got you, or I feel used, if they just kind of collapse in the chair and then get up really rapidly, you know? What would the chair say when they leave the room? And just notice how much you'll just kind of make guesses from your own embodied experience as to the answers to these questions, but then share them with the person and notice how they land. And you'll be amazed by how much you can learn about someone from just trying on their embodiment. So how might that work in leadership? Like I said, you could use that with your team. It could be an amazing way of getting to know each other. But if you think about it, the ramifications are really interesting. What would it be like for a man to step into the embodiment of a female coworker? Or what would it be like for a white person to do the same with a person of color in different settings? It might not just be sitting down, to really embody. I remember I saw an image, I think it was a Wendy Palmer training, and there was just this image of a woman leading a man down a corridor by the small of his back, with his hand, her hand on the small of his back. And that's an embodiment that's quite common for men to place their hand on the small. But it looked so bizarre to see this the other way around. So what would it be like to try that on, these embodiments that we take for granted, all these habitual ways of being and things like that? So great. Guys, we've got 6 minutes left. The last principle was unity. But I guess that's going to have to wait for another time. And more will be revealed. Mike, you lead us on this one here. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Nathan. That was amazing. I definitely was making notes the whole way through. I learned a lot. So yeah, that was sensational. And if anyone has any questions for Nathan, please pop them in the Q&A box.
Yeah.
Whilst people are posting those questions, don't forget that you can go back and watch this, because there was a lot in this. I know I definitely want to go rewatch it. So you can access that for free for 48 hours on the Embodiment Portal. And if you want lifetime access, you can also upgrade your membership and you will get all the video recordings here, as well as the audio recordings for everything from the whole conference. It's cheap as chips. It gives you lifetime access to everything in the conference. It helps us put on this event, which is a very big logistical piece. And it also allows everyone to be able to watch it for free for 48 hours. So you're doing everyone else a favor as well. We have a question coming in. Do you do any workshops or trainings on this, Nathan?
Sorry, I was muted. Right. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm the founder of a company called the Somatic School. So we train coaches, facilitators, counselors, therapists. Also, if you're a budding coach, we train you to become, getting your first coaching qualification. Basically, to incorporate somatic approaches, impactful somatic approaches like those I described, into both online, to work with the body's intelligence, both online and in person. So I do a free workshop as well. It's called the Introduction to Body Oriented Coaching. And the next one's actually in 2 days' time on the 20th of October. And I think Courtney has the link for that. So I don't know if now, I'm sorry, Mike, I'm not sure if now is the time to share that, but
we'll be posting all Nathan's links in the notes here, as well as links to the Facebook page where you can all continue the conversation with one another. Everyone is invited to join that as well. I think I'm just going to pull apart some of these questions and then everyone else can continue the conversation on Facebook. Yeah, the Natasha one. Can you at least tell us one sentence about unity principle, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So unity basically is everything is part of a greater whole. Points to the interconnectedness of all things, of all life, of all events. The way that our nervous systems interact with one another. When people say we are connected, we truly are at a visceral level. So holism is about universal scale. So invites us to think about the bigger picture, systems at play.
Mm. And I also love this question from SK. How to best support introverts in meetings when you're an extrovert?
Well, I mean, to be honest, that's a question that I would love to put to the group, because I think there's no right answer to that, is there? If you want to know my opinion on that, I would guess it would be slow down, probably. I love the Taoist, the thing from the Tao Te Ching that said, those who know don't talk, those who do not know talk. So there's just something about, is there wisdom in creating more space for the extrovert? I'm talking here about being a conscientious extrovert in that context and slowing down and making space.
And then one more.
There's loads of comments in the chat actually about that as well. So yeah, I'm sure other people have good suggestions there. Maybe some that.
Yeah. I also love this one from Miriam. How can we practice loving presence with a team member that triggers us?
I suppose that's the mastery of this, isn't it? Because as with anything, it's a practice. So practicing loving presence, maybe start with people who it's easy to feel caring and compassionate and kind and loving towards. But over time, the more that you practice that, the more you'll find within you how you need to organize yourself in order to do that, to find this person, a source of nourishment and inspiration from a person. So even a person who triggers you, Absolutely. Mm. You know, it's like what can you find in your body, for example, that feels good right now, even if you're feeling pain elsewhere? There's something that you can find, probably, maybe. And I suppose that would be my invitation.
Mm. Well, thank you so much, Nathan. Everyone, unfortunately, we're out of time, but please head over either to the coffee break room or to the Facebook group so you can continue the conversation. Next up, we have Arti Wu with the four channels of the inner critic. And Nathan, just before you go, what is one tip that you would give us just to help us remain embodied?
So my one tip would be, it's more of a question, which is, what is presence if not being with? Being with, both for self and others. What is presence if not being with? Yeah.
Well, I love that.
Me too, mate.
Well, thank you, everyone. We're going to have to end now. Definitely check out Nathan's materials, and we'll see you over all on Facebook or in the coffee room. Thank you, Nathan.
Absolute honor. Thank you so much, everyone, and thank you, Mike and Courtney and Sarah and the Embodiment Conference. Thank you. Good night from London. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks so much.